This is Sound Ideas. I'm Mike McCurdy. Get a report on Metronet's Twin City expansion. Representative Kathy Scheller says the company is affecting the marketplace.
There's no infrastructure like this, especially to residences in Bloomington Normal, so we're pulling in a lot of customers that way.
Metronet now has more than 1,000 customers for its high-speed internet service in Bloomington Normal, GLT's Ryan Denham reports. It's a conversation with ISU President Larry Dietz. There's a state budget, but other budget problems are looming, including unfunded pensions. Charlie Schlenker has the interview. And hear how a Central Illinois barbershop quartet placed in a national competition. Laura Kennedy has a report on the top finishers called After Hours. All of that and a GLT News update on the way. It's August 10th, 2017. This is Sound Ideas on GLT.
Support for the Sound Ideas podcast comes from listener contributions to GLT, with additional support from Country Financial Representative Justin M. Boyd. Information at justinmboyd.com. This is 89.1 GLT and WGLT.org.
This is Sound Ideas. I'm Mike McCurdy. Anyone who's ever had to haggle with Comcast over their internet or cable TV bill is probably happy to see Metronet bring a little competition to the Bloomington Normal market. A year after starting work, Metronet is popping up in more and more Twin City neighborhoods, and the neighborhoods the company is choosing is still the source of some criticism. GLT's Ryan Denham asks Metronet spokeswoman Kathy Scheller how the rollout is going.
It's going very well. You know, it's a big deployment. We're investing, you know, millions of dollars in this infrastructure. There's no charge to any, you know, no taxpayer dollars being used. So it's a big deployment. We have 40% of our build area available for installation today in Bloomington Normal. So that equates to over 12,000 passes or businesses and homes. That when we call a pass, when we go buy a business or a home, it's called a pass. So that equates to over 12,000.
In most of these cases, are you is Metronet actually digging and burying fiber optic? Are you running lines on utility poles? Some combination of both?
Well, Ryan, we do a combination of both. Historically, when you install fiber optic infrastructure, you follow power. So if power is above ground, we follow that course. If power is underground, we follow that in the public easement right away.
So you mentioned that you have 12,000 passes, which means businesses and homes that have access. So how many customers do you actually have in our area at this point?
At this point, as far as residential customers go, we have probably over 1,000 residential customers at this point. That have come onto our fiber. I think the reason that we've been able to capture so many at this point are some of the extraordinary pricing opportunities that are available for them. I believe another option is there's no infrastructure like this, especially to residences in Bloomington Normal, so we're pulling in a lot of customers that way. In addition, there are no residential contracts. So if we pass a home and people are interested in trying out our fiber optic, they have that opportunity to do so without being tied into a contract.
And so how do you decide which neighborhoods to start with in a market like ours?
What we do is when we come into a community, what we do is we typically design the entire community prior to coming in. And the order that we go in is our accessibility to our trunk lines or our main feeder lines that come in. Typically, when we bring the fiber optics into a community, a lot of times those communities that come on or light up first are those that are closest to that trunk line.
So who is actually doing all of the construction and digging work and you know, running lines and all that? What kind of folks are actually doing that? Is that Metronet employees or kind of third party contractors? How does that work?
Typically, what we do when we go into a community is we have actual Metronet personnel that will go in. We will have a market project lead that will take care of construction. He's a Metronet employee, as well as outside plant engineers who are Metronet employees that supervise the crews. One of the things that we're proud of is what we do when we come into a community is we immediately, you know, given some economic development impact, and that we do hire third-party crews to install the fiber, but they are, you know, supervised by Metronet personnel who ensure that they meet the standards that our company requires.
Is there a target in mind? Are you looking to accomplish, you know, X% of the community passed by X date? What are you kind of shooting for at this point?
You know, typically when we come into a community the size of Bloomington Normal, that deployment usually lasts about 2 years. 2 years is where it usually takes us to come in a community of that size. Now, I say that because we continually, once we're in a community and the fiber is laid and we develop a footprint, we do have the opportunity many times to expand to adjacent communities. So the deployment continues for quite some time. For example, we've been in Lafayette, West Lafayette, the home of Purdue University, for several years. That initial deployment took a couple of years to do, but we are still there because what we're doing is we're deploying into additional areas that surround those communities.
This is GLT's Sound Ideas. I'm Ryan Denham. Today, a progress report on Metronet, a telecommunications company that's offering new fiber optic services in Bloomington Normal. You may have seen their little construction flags popping up outside your home, indicating that they're getting close to running lines through your neighborhood. Last fall, when Metronet was first moving in, the company faced criticism that its coverage area would exclude Bloomington's west side, serving only the city's wealthier east side. Indeed, their coverage area map changed, and today there are many different parts of Bloomington Normal under construction. But the city's west side is still marked differently on that map, only as future construction. Mayor Terry Renner, while happy to see some competition in the market, was one of the critics. During a recent interview on GLT's Sound Ideas, host Mike McCurdy asked Renner where things stand.
And I think that's a serious problem. But beyond that, we'll see how they have been willing at least to talk to us, and so we'll see how that goes.
Metronet has indicated they are not blackballing the west side.
That's what they've said, right.
But so far, no work over there yet.
That's what we're having trouble with, yes.
So where are the neighborhoods that are getting service?
At this point, they're almost all east side and central Bloomington.
And you hope that the west side will be one of those future neighborhoods.
Absolutely.
I asked Kathy Scheller from Metronet if this was a fair criticism and whether it impacted where Metronet is building out.
You know, it's interesting. That particular map, Bloomington Normal was the first community whereby we utilized that map in Illinois. And I think that initial criticism came about because of a history that perhaps was in place there that we were going to follow suit. But I'm happy to report that what we did immediately, and this is what I like about Metronet, was we met with city officials. We met with the aldermen from that particular area, as well as the mayor and the council, and came up with and continue to come up with amicable solutions to be sure that the residents on the west will have our coverage as well.
And so it sounds like you also ran up against some challenges with using Ameren's utility poles in Bloomington, west of Mercer Avenue here in town. It sounds like you were seeking permission to install some new wooden utility poles in parts of Bloomington where there maybe wasn't room on Ameren's existing poles. Kind of where did that end up? Or were you happy with the progress there?
Yes, we are very happy with that progress. And, we don't go pole for pole. We just do something that we can construct in order to make sure that coverage is available to citizens with that time. So, and Ameren is working with us well on that in addition as well. So that is going very, very well.
Have there been any other hurdles or challenges as you enter our market?
It is, Ryan, a multi-million-dollar investment on our part, and it's a big deployment. What we're doing is adding additional infrastructure for the residents of Bloomington Normal. So that type of deployment is very arduous, and it's very busy. Our network engineers have done a great job designing the community. We just continue to follow that design and continue with this massive scope of work in order to ensure the residents there that they will have the opportunity to have access to this world-class infrastructure. When I speak with people, I let them know that less than 10% of communities nationwide have access to this. So this is a very future-proof type of technology that will allow your residents in Bloomington and Normal to have the opportunity to just have their own devices in their home connected to our fiber. It will allow them to stream without buffering. It will allow them options to so much new technology that's coming out.
So where does Bloomington Normal fit into all of the markets that Metronet has at this point? Or will we be one of the larger markets you serve or one of the smaller ones, kind of right in the middle? Where do we fit in?
You know, Ryan, I think initially I would say you're one of our mid to large markets. We're currently, going into a large group of communities up in Illinois and the northwest suburbs of Chicago. Those communities are quite quite large as well. We continue to look to deploy fiber in communities surrounding the Indianapolis area. We find that our niche typically is in with towns that are college towns. We do very well there because of the need for additional technologies, not only at the school, which typically has enough fiber, but also to the students who live off campus and also the community as a whole. We do very well there, and we also do very well in communities that are adjacent to larger cities, whereby you have a lot of telecommuters, you have a lot of people that would have interest in working from home and have access to this type of fiber optics.
Gotcha. Okay. So ultimately, what triggered your entry into our market? Did it relate to Illinois, the regulatory environment offering companies like yours that ability to obtain a statewide franchise, which I think is kind of a relatively recent development in the last several years, instead of working through municipalities, or was there some other factor?
You know, it's interesting. Metronet in Illinois, we continue to achieve local franchise agreements. We found that that is most effective there because you automatically get to know the communities and the officials who preside in those communities. So we achieve local franchise agreements. I believe that the initial, when we go to look to communities that we believe would be open to this type of technology and understand it, we really do go for the two that I mentioned. We do very well in communities that have a university or several, as in your case, as well as communities that are adjacent to larger cities. We just believe that the infrastructure, the people there, the potential customers are people who would really appreciate the speeds and the offerings that our company has.
Ultimately, how does your competition respond when you enter a market like this? I mean, here in Bloomington Normal, it's Comcast, of course. What kinds of things have you seen happen from your competition, and then how does Metronet kind of adjust to that adjustment?
Sure. You know, what I found, Ryan, when I go into communities and we come in, and a lot of times we're not only the second, sometimes the third entrant into the market, what we find is that our competition suddenly seems like they do a little bit better. That's why a lot of times when I speak with city officials, competition is a good thing, because what it does is it offers their residents choice. And as I've mentioned, you know, I'm sure that the offerings have been better lately from our competition there. But the thing that I like to stress is to have a fiber optic direct connection, especially for residents there. You don't have it there. So we're actually offering you something that our competition cannot. But they are trying, you know, typically what will happen is they just do a little bit better. So they try to, you know, do better for their customers as well.
That's Kathy Scheller, who works in external affairs at Metronet, a telecommunications company that's offering new fiber optic services around Bloomington Normal. I'm Ryan Denham.
And I'm Mike McCurdy at Sound Ideas. You can see a full map of Metronet's current and planned coverage area at our website, WGLT.org.
Support for GLT's Sound Ideas comes from Justin M. Boyd, Country Financial Representative. Building relationships while supporting and serving the community, Justin offers life insurance options designed to protect your family and leave a lasting legacy. Information at justinmboyd.com. This is 89.1 GLT and WGLT.org.
Coming up, it's a conversation with Illinois State University President Larry Dietz. The state has a budget, but there are still budget issues looming, like unfunded pensions. GLT's Charlie Schlinker has the interview ahead during Sound Ideas. I'm Mike McCurdy. Last month, a Central Illinois-based a cappella group journeyed to Las Vegas, where they were a smash hit at an international singing competition. GLT's Laura Kennedy has more.
The group is called After Hours, and their tight harmonies help them clinch third place in the quartet division at the Barbershop Harmony Society International Convention and Competition. Tim Beitel sings tenor in the Barbershop Quartet. His day job involves music, too, as a public school music teacher in Morton. And if you think barbershop is just for squares and old folks, Beitel says that's just not so. He says a cappella music is experiencing a resurgence in the 21st century.
Singing has just been out there a lot more, kind of in the public eye, I think, which has helped. And then you've had groups like Pentatonix and some of these other, you know, a cappella groups that all of a sudden have just brought more recognition to a cappella music. Barbershop's kind of always been there in the background. It got started, the Society for Barbershop got started in 1938. So it's been there all along. But now you're seeing kind of this youth movement in barbershop because a cappella music is just being more widely accepted. So I was in high school and went to a youth and harmony festival here in Bloomington.
Yeah,
and
they're really good at outreach to young people.
Yeah, they are. And I had kind of been introduced to this one barbershop quartet called the Gas House Gang. And they were just this great quartet. I was not even really all that much into singing until I heard this quartet. Actually, I heard my parents went to a show and brought home a CD, and I was like, that is amazing what that sounds like. So anyway, fast forward, I went to the Youth and Harmony Festival and just started getting more and more into barbershop. Had a high school quartet, went off to college and kind of met some new guys at college. And that's actually where After Hours got started. We were all students at Bradley University, and this was back in, 2008, probably. 2008 was when we first got together, and we were just the four of us guys were just basically singing a song for a talent show that our chorale had there at the university, and we got together and
it just clicked.
Now actually there's only two of those four guys are still in the group, so it was kind of just four guys from the chorale. We sang a couple songs and really enjoyed it or whatever. Then as time went on, we found out more about kind of this barbershop world of competing and competitions and all that kind of extra stuff there. So as we got into the kind of the more competitive realm, I think we changed group members a couple times through the last 8-9 years here. But there's still actually the bass singer Dan and I are still original members from 2008 when we first got together. The other two guys, Drew and Brian, we met along the way through competition and through different circumstances, they joined the group.
So how would you describe, Tim, the sound of After Hours?
I mean, the typical barbershop sound compared to maybe other a cappella styles, you're going to hear just really tight harmonies, okay? So a cappella obviously means no instruments, and you're going to hear the lead voice, which is going to be more, I guess, if you're thinking in choral terms, like a second tenor kind of voice. The lead is going to always, for the most part, sing the melody, and then you're going to have a voice, the tenor voice, which is what I sing, on top of that, a lot of times using the falsetto voice, the male falsetto voice, and then you have the baritone singer who kind of sings above the lead when the melody's low and below the lead when the melody's high, and then you have the bass singer, obviously, who sings the low note.
Light the candles, just light them up right, ice out, the ice out, roll the rug up, roll it up, it's today, it's today, though it may not be anyone's birthday, though it's far from the first of the year, I know that this very minute has history in it, was for the moment we're here, it's a time for making merry. So I'm for, yes, I'm for making hay, making hay. To tune the grand up, dance your shoes off. Strike the band up, strike it up. It's today, it's today.
It's tight harmony, so it's not like some other a cappella styles where it might be more spread out or you might have, you know, kind of a typical choral thing where you have high to low as far as the parts go. You actually have the parts that cross more often because the harmonies are just tighter. So
how do you keep it straight? You're so tight.
Yeah, well, I think that for the four of us, we all read music. So we were all classically trained at Bradley and at different universities. So we kind of have some background there, just kind of, I guess, learning through doing it, through definitely there's an ear training element of it. Even though you can read the notes, there's a whole other element of blend and being able to not just sing your note, but being able to hear, you know, how it should fit into the chord and how you should tune it and all that kind of stuff like that. So there's definitely, at the higher level of barbershop, it can be a pretty complicated or takes a lot of work. So,
well, how much do you guys rehearse in a week?
That has changed through the years. Now we're a distance quartet. So actually,
wait a minute, what's a distance quartet?
When we all got together at Bradley, obviously we were rehearsing 3-4 times a week.
Because you're all on campus.
We were all on campus. Yeah, it was great. Now we're, you know, guys in our 30s with families. And a couple of the guys, our lead singer, Drew, he actually sings in the Voices of Liberty at Disney World. So he lives in Orlando. And then, our baritone, Brian, he's a manager of a Chipotle out in Dubuque, Iowa. And then our bass singer, Dan, is a choir teacher up in Freeport, up by Rockford. And then I'm the only one actually who's still in the area here.
Well, so. how do you practice?
The further we've kind of gone, the higher up we've gotten in the competition, we get more performance opportunities through that. That's the big thing. So honestly, a lot of our rehearsal now comes when we have performances or gigs. You know, when we have a performance on a Saturday, we'll all fly in on a Friday, rehearse on Friday night, sing the show on Saturday, maybe rehearse a little on Sunday or whatever, and then head back out. So we kind of try to make use of our performances as also kind of being our practice time as well.
So tell me about those performance opportunities. What are you doing? Are you singing in concerts, in weddings?
Well, I would say that 90% of our performances are for barbershop chapters. So there's barbershop choruses and chapters all around the U.S. and even in other countries. And so a lot of our shows, each of these chapters will have their kind of yearly annual show, and they like to have a featured quartet as part of the show. So they'll call us up and hire us to come out and be kind of the featured quartet on their show. I would say that's 90% of our performances. We also do have different opportunities where, you know, we'll be hired by different organizations for a special benefit or this or that, you know, where we'll do full concerts and things like that as well.
So you're third place in the quartet division at the recent Barbershop Harmony Society International Convention and Competition. How many other quartets were you competing against in order to achieve third place?
There's over 1,000, probably 1,200-ish quartets
From
all over the world that compete in district contests or these preliminary contests. And you have to score a certain score out of 100, which is, I think the percentage is 76. If you score that percentage, then you can qualify for an international contest. So it took us actually a few years of being together till we even qualified. But only about 50 to 55 quartets out of those 1,200 qualify for the international contest. And so then out of those 55 that make it, that score that 76 or better, they all come and you sing two songs. After the round one, the top 20 quartets move on, and then you sing two new songs in round two. And then if you make it on to the top 10, you sing two new songs in the finals, which is the top 10. And so then we got third place in the contest.
Is that the highest you've ever placed before?
Yes, that's the highest we've placed.
Were you surprised by that at all?
You know, it's been kind of a long journey for us. Like I said, you know, back when we started competing 7-8 years ago, we didn't qualify for international. So then we kind of 5 years ago or so, we first qualified, and then we got 16th, and then we got 16th again, and 8th, and 8th, and 6th.
So you've just been climbing.
Yeah, we've been climbing. So last year we got 6th, and then this year we came out, and the top 5 get a medal, which is kind of fairly significant in the barbershop world is medaling. So our goal was really just to have a good time and make music and enjoy ourselves and, you know, let the chips fall where they fall. But I think we were all pretty excited to get a medal, and then for that to be a third place medal was just really, really exciting for all of us.
Well, what did it take for you to get from not even qualifying to getting to third place?
You know, years of work, and it's the cliche that a lot of barbershop quartets use, that it's all about the journey, and that there's a, but it's so true in a way, because throughout all these years we've had different coaching sessions with prominent barbershop names and acapella, you know, coaches throughout the years. We've probably had upwards of 10 or more coaches. We've had a few who've been kind of our main coaches, but you learn songs and you get new songs and you try to find songs that fit your quartet identity, you know, that what is, you asked earlier in the interview, what is After Hours sound or whatever? And that's part of the journey, right? Is finding, okay, what type of songs fit our voices and fit our personalities.
Can you tell me about the songs that you choose?
That's been part of the journey, partially because a few years ago, we actually had our lead singer, who initially actually was a guy we had met at college. He had to leave the quartet. So we got a new lead singer, which getting a new singer of any other part is probably not as big of a deal. But when you get a new lead singer, mm-hmm. that really can change the identity of the quartet, because he's the guy who's out there singing the melody, really kind of telling the story of the song in a lot of ways. When we switched to Drew, our current lead singer, it took some time of trying all kinds of different songs to see, okay, look, what's After Hours with Drew now? The songs that we've kind of landed on lately that really have fit us, that I think helped us kind of make that next step this year, was actually songs a lot more kind of swing songs, some show tunes from like Broadway musicals and stuff like that. But I'm just kind of finding songs that are easy for us to be kind of relaxed, have a good time, easy singing kind of songs. So some of the songs we sang were, we sang a Mel Torme kind of You're a Heavenly Thing, which is a swing tune.
Baby, you stole this heart of mine. Just like the stars, your eyes, they shine. Your beauty always satisfies. And that's what makes you so divine. They took the moonlight out of the skies and put the moonlight right in your eyes. Your eyes,
da, da. You're a heavenly thing.
Baby, you're a heavenly thing.
And we sang a song from a musical called Catch Me If You Can, if you're familiar with that movie.
Leonardo DiCaprio.
Yes, yes, yes. There's a musical of it called Catch Me If You Can, and we sing the song Butter Out of Cream, which is kind of like the son, or the, I think it's like the father talking to the son, and it's one of the kind of like the themes throughout the story or whatever. That's the song we sang this year. We sang a song from Sweeney Todd called Not While I'm Around. We sang The Next 10 Minutes, which is from the last 5 years, so a couple Broadway tunes in there. So yeah, just, I mean, a variety of songs, but a lot of Broadway, some swing tunes, kind of stuff like that is really what we have kind of found our niche, you know, as far as that goes.
So that is part of your identity as
yes.
a group.
Yeah.
Where are your plans going from here? Do you anticipate going again to the next international competition?
Kind of the next step for us, every fall, we have the Illinois District Convention, which is where we'll qualify again for international. So we will be trying to qualify again here in October, I think October 6th and 7th, here in Bloomington, actually, is the Illinois District Convention. We'll sing 4 songs and get our prelim score to then go to the international competition next year, which is in Orlando. So yeah, we'll be working hard again. Right now, we're kind of in that process of looking at our 6 songs we sang at international this year and deciding which do we want to keep. Do we want to get some new songs? But also, honestly, just, you know, enjoying what happened this last month and just getting excited about doing more shows. We've definitely had some offers coming in from getting third place, having more show offers and stuff. So we're excited about that and excited to sing for people and enjoy our passion like this.
Do you see yourselves at all transitioning to doing this full time? You teach.
Yeah. You know, there's not a lot of barbershop quartets who I would say have gone to full time. I mean, there may be some exceptions for I know of a couple
the guys,
guys.
On the Tonight Show. That
right, can, yeah. right, yeah, Jimmy Fallon. There you go. Yeah, and there's been, you know, a few cases here or there where quartets have kind of made it for a while at least, or maybe can do enough shows to kind of keep it going for a while. But I think for the most part, barbershoppers kind of have a day job as well and kind of can just use it as a hobby. So yeah, I don't intend on making it a full-time thing.
Maybe that helps you keep it fresh.
Yeah, I think so. We all just enjoy it as kind of a hobby, and honestly, we're all 4 of us were musicians in college as well, so it's almost, I kind of look at it as partial hobby and also kind of part of my career as well, as far as just an extension of my career as a music teacher, is also being able to kind of sing professionally as well is a nice thing to add to, you know, teaching music.
That's Tim Beitel from the vocal group After Hours, and the music you've been hearing will be a part of their brand new CD coming out very shortly. I'm Laura Kennedy.
You can find that CD at their Facebook page. The music will also be available for download. You're listening to After Hours and the song Gonna Build on Sound Ideas.
I'm gonna build me a mountain from a little hill. I'm gonna build me a mountain.
At least I think I will.
I know you will. And when I build that mountain, I'm gonna build it high till it reaches the sky. Don't know how I'm gonna do it. I only know I'm gonna try. My, I don't know how I'm gonna do it.
Only know I'm gonna try. Ba-da-ba-da-ba. Gonna try.
You're listening to Sound Ideas.
Celebrate the end of summer at a harvest festival that does it right. The Sweet Corn Blues Festival is Saturday and Sunday, August 26th and 27th in Uptown Normal. This family-friendly street festival features tons of fresh sweet corn straight from the field, all kinds of fun activities, plus great live blues. Stop by the GLT booth to say hi, and don't miss the Sweet Corn Blues Festival, Saturday and Sunday, August 26th and 27th in Uptown Normal. More info at WGLT.org.
Support for GLT comes from Country Financial, where taking small steps now can help you achieve a bright financial future. Additional support comes from the friends of GLT. This is 89.1 GLT and WGLT.org.
You're listening to Sound Ideas. I'm Mike McCurdy. There is a state budget. Public universities and colleges now have some ability to plan, but the underfunded state pension system's problem remains largely unsolved. GLT's Charlie Schlenker talks with Illinois State University President Larry Dietz about what he thinks might eventually happen to address that crisis.
Well, it's obviously the elephant in the room. Courts have made their determination, so there, you know, that's one issue I think that folks can look at. I think it's important for everybody to realize what a pickle the state of Illinois is in, and therefore universities are in. And I think it's important for everybody to come to the table and begin to talk about all kinds of issues with, you know, potential solutions for all of those. I think that's the only way that things can be resolved, and I think it needs to be resolved over a phased period of time, a longer period of time. I don't think there are any quick fixes in this. If there were, I think those would have already been in play. But it's clearly a big issue, and lots of emotion and passion on both sides of that. But I think good things happen whenever people come to the table and begin to talk.
What are some of the options that you think ought to be considered? Without giving away your own bargaining position, I grant you.
Sure. Well, I think, there are lots of things that have been discussed, and these really are not my ideas, but, you know, there's a discussion about how the state really needs to, you know, write its own house of sorts, and none of the rest of us created this issue, and it was created through legislation, and the money, if you listen to some people, was there and was simply not spent on pensions or not held back for pensions. So I think that issue is that no one's really done anything wrong in terms of. Being eligible for those traditional packages. By the same token, there's been conversations about, lots of other ways to handle that. I know that, lots of organizations have been having discussions about that. And I know that there are a number of proposals, including, trying to, change the system for new people that are coming into the system and into employment for the first time. There's been some progress made on that through the tiering approach. There's other discussions about how, parts of the retirement traditional package, might be looked at in terms of, the income tax issue, medical coverage, all those kinds of things. So I really think it's time for other folks to come to the table and begin to talk about that and talk about potential solutions.
For instance, taxing retirement income or the idea that benefits would be peeled off from the pension package, which is a legally gray area still. How would that affect ISU's competitive position and the ability to attract quality faculty and staff?
It would probably have some impact, but I don't think the great impact that a lot of folks might think about. I think new folks that are, starting their careers and, on the faculty or perhaps, in staff positions and so forth, they're looking at Illinois State for opportunity. And so, they would look, I think, at how that compares in terms of a package down the road. But I think for the most part, people would come to Illinois State University because of the fine opportunities that are here to teach and do research and provide service, and would look at that perhaps not as critically as someone who's perhaps more senior in their career that would come in and in retirement is around the corner.
Whenever a budget passes, and especially perhaps after one passes following a two-year period without a budget, there's a waiting period while all the affected organizations digest what it actually means and read the fine print, so to speak. What has the fine print shown you since it passed?
Well, I think we're still in the digestion process of that, to use your term. We have been promised the money, but how it's going to come and when it's going to come, we still are having discussions about that and are waiting for from directions. To me, the best part of that, there's clearly the general operating part that we're very concerned about and anticipate getting those funds. But for students, it's also the MAP money. And we're on a schedule of reimbursement for MAP, and we anticipate that that will be fully funded, at least at past levels, for this next year. And that, to me, is the really good news part. But we're still waiting for some answers on that.
ISU has carried MAP while the state wasn't reimbursing.
Right.
How much more flexibility do you have now that at least the current MAP money will presumably be flowing?
Yeah. Well, we had as much we have as much or as little flexibility as we've had before, in that we anticipated that the state would come through on MAP. They always have, and we anticipated that would be the case. So while we fronted some money in terms of commitment for that, it'll help us with our cash flow and better planning. But we really were in the same kind of situation in terms of our faith in the state to come up with MAP dollars as they've had in the past. So, you know, during the fiscal year, things get sorted out usually. This year was a little bit later than that, but nevertheless, the state has made a commitment to those students, and we anticipated that was going to be the case in the past, and it has. We anticipate the same thing for this next fiscal year.
This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. We're speaking with ISU President Larry Dietz. School is starting.
You bet.
It's a joyful and a stressful time. Which predominates for you?
Oh, joy. No question about it. To me, you know, there's an excitement that exists during the academic year that's obviously not as here as much in the summertime because a lot of the students are gone. But many years ago, I started my freshman year at a university, and I've been starting my year all over again for a long time in my career. And I get as excited about it now as I did back when I was a freshman in college myself. So to me, it's very exciting. There's a lot of energy. There's a lot of expectations. There's a lot of optimism. There are a lot of folks that have hope in their hearts about what they can accomplish here, and that to me is just really a very positive aspect of starting the school year.
What are some major differences for ISU this fall?
Well, you know, in terms of quality academic programs, we there's been no difference in any of that. We are going to be undergoing some renovation in our Bone Student Center, and we'll have a opening for that in September. So there's going to be we're going to ask people to kind of pardon our dust, if you will, as we begin to renovate that facility. So from a facility perspective, that's probably the biggest one on the campus. From academic programming perspective, this will be the first year that we've had an incoming group of students in our cybersecurity program, and so hats off to the faculty for looking at ways to keep the curriculum current and vibrant and meeting the needs and wishes of the individuals who employ our students after they graduate from here. So, in terms of those kinds of things, the quality is still here, and we're looking forward to starting the new year.
What does the size of the freshman cohort look like?
We're probably going to be down a little bit. We anticipated that. Part of that is the overall demography of students that are graduating from Illinois high schools. That number's been declining for the last several years. The budget impasse, I think, has hurt us for the last 2 years in terms of, creating an anxiety among a lot of the parents of some of our students and wondering if there's going to be a budget and thereby sending some of their sons and daughters out of state. So that's had an impact as well. So we anticipate we'll be down, but not dramatically so. We've been in the range of 20 to 21,000 for many, many years. And while last year we were over 21,000 by just a few, we'll probably settle in somewhere around 20,500, maybe a few more, a few less, something like that. But it's still within our range of predictability, and we've done our budget planning around that.
So down about 500, or down how much? How many?
Well, if you're, you know, if you're, you count all the way to 10th day, and that 10th day brings you very close to September. And so, you know, folks are still applying, and we're still admitting, and we'll continue to do that right up to the beginning of school. So I'd say if you're an optimist, we'll be at 20,800. If you're a pessimist, about 20,300 or 400, somewhere in there. But our enrollment management folks do a fantastic job of recruitment. Our faculty do a fantastic job of helping students be retained at the institution. And so what we found is that some of our transfer numbers are down a little bit. And I think, you know, some of those individuals are having some difficulty also figuring out whether or not, you know, there's stability in the system yet. And I think that was true of some of our freshmen, because we're also down in freshmen. So you've got the demographic issue, you've got the crisis of confidence issue, but we're still within our tolerance range, very, very stable and strong in the middle of that tolerance range. So I think we're going to be fine, but our enrollment management team really do a fantastic job of landing the plane, if you will, on the proper runway and shutting it down at the proper time. So we're doing pretty good.
The transfer students, are the reduction this year, is that largely from in-state transfers or from out-of-state transfers coming to Illinois? What?
Yeah, it's mainly in-state transfers, but that's also a reflection of the downward demographic trend. So that's happened over the last 3 or 4 years. So, you know, if you have fewer numbers that are entering into community colleges, as we've had because of the downturn in the number of students that are graduating from high schools, then, you know, 3 years later, we pick up that down number. And so I think we still are doing well with our yield and the percentage of those students and of that market. We're still doing very well with those, but those numbers just, again, are impacted by that demographic.
So worst case, it's about a 700 student drop, and best case, it's about a 200 student drop. What are the financial implications of that range?
We talk about $1 million per 100 students. It's not quite that much, but it's, you know, for our conversation, it's close enough. So we will have a $7.2 million decline already in our budget from the state. And then wherever that other number, you know, comes in.
A couple million to $7 million or thereabouts.
Right,
ISU President Larry Dietz spoke with GLT's Charlie Schlinker. Student move-in to campus housing begins Wednesday. Expect road closures and traffic rerouting around Uptown and the campus area. You're listening to Sound Ideas. I'm Mike McCurdy. The blues duo Kathy Lemons and Phil Berkowitz make a stop at Pop's Place in Decatur Saturday night. The romantically involved couple used the term "the lucky losers" when on stage. GLT's John Norton recently talked via Skype with Berkowitz and Lemon about their collaboration and their new album.
Me and my sweet baby got a good thing going on. Got a love so strong that we'll never grow old.
You're listening to music from In Any Town. It's the latest release from a couple that call themselves the Lucky Losers, Phil Berkowitz and Kathy Lemons. Great to join you here on GLT. Thanks for your time.
Hey, John. Happy to be here.
I don't know who wants to answer this, but I'm sure you get asked it all the time. What's in a name? The Lucky Losers.
It's just rife with all kinds of great little underlying themes and ironies and idiosyncrasies that are kind of define who we are as people, I guess.
In a nutshell, we were both losers until we met each other.
Oh, come on now. Really?
No, we're a great team. Make no mistake about it. Where we were once disorganized and confused about what we were doing, when we started joining forces together, we became a cohesive machine, a booking machine and a
we're lucky.
Promotional machine.
We're lucky to have the opportunity to go out there and lose on a regular basis. You know what I mean? That's, we're very lucky. And with each failure, you know, I mean, there's a, you know, we may not win the battle, you know, or win the whole war, as they say, you know, death is going to overtake us eventually, but we may win some skirmishes along the way.
And so, we're having fun.
Say, baby, it's me again. Why don't you let me in? Give me that sweet thing that I've been waiting for. Didn't know we could get so high.
Okay, so the song we're playing right now is So High. I'm guessing it's autobiographical?
Yes, it is. I think it is.
Yeah, I was just kind of wanted to write just sort of a kind of a simply put sort of song that, you know, that grooved but also had sort of, you know, sort of loving sentiment that I was, you know, feeling for Kathy when we were first dating together, and the sort of excitability of it. And it was, you know, it came together pretty easily. I co-write with my songs with a gentleman named Danny Caron, who is incredible.
He's a great guitar player.
Yeah. Yeah. Used to be the band leader for Charles Brown.
Absolutely.
And Danny's been kind of a mentor to me over the years. And so he's a great
teacher. Danny teacher is a wonderful partner. Musician and a great teacher.
Let's go to the album itself again. In Any Town is the name of the album. And on here, you guys, you have a number of impressive names joining you. Kit Anderson was your producer, it sounds like. Jeff Jensen joined you on here. And on one song, Frank Goldwasser, another great guitar player. Can you talk a little bit about the guy they call Paris Slim?
Paris Slim, a.k.a. Frank Goldwasser, is one of the great secrets in blues. If you love blues guitar, you need to check him out. He is amazing. He can play anything. He's brilliant. He's from Paris, France, no lie. I met Frank Goldwasser way back in 1987, where we briefly had, for just a few months, a band together. But Frank, I just basically asked Kid, you know, hey, maybe we could get Frank Goldwasser. What's he doing? I know he's in Santa Barbara. So I called Frank up, and he went into his studio, and he cut those tracks, and we threw out some ideas. Frank is one of the best-kept secrets. If you folks dig in and Google Frank Goldwasser, you're going to have a little trouble. But keep looking, because he will turn up.
That's Kathy Lemons. You're listening to GLT Sound Ideas. I'm John Norton. She's joined by Phil Berkowitz, her boyfriend, and they're the lucky losers. They're going to be in Decatur here real soon. Phil, I'll go with you. You recorded Jackson on this most recent album, a song made famous by Johnny Cash and June Carter. Was it the chemistry that Johnny and June had that you know, that was the spur for putting this on the album?
Well, you know, to be honest, I had never heard that song before, and Kathy turned me on to it and said, "Hey, you know, you wanna do a duet cover, you know, a classic duet cover? Here's one." And I listened, and I was like, "Gee, you know, this might be good. You know, fashion it, you know, to what our strengths are." And you know, we sort of gave it more of kind of a boogaloo kind of New Orleans groove there.
You ready, baby?
Honey, I was born ready.
Well, that's what you say.
We got married in a fever, hotter than a pepper spray.
You know, I think that when we started doing this, somehow we developed some sort of a little bit of a
banter.
Yeah, rapport between us that people seem to like. You know, they like that kind of male-female tension thing, you know,
on
stage.
Well, it's such a funny song. It's funny, man.
And they always had fun when they performed it, too, which was often, yeah.
Mm-hmm. They were great. I love Johnny Cash, and I love his awesome
stuff. Funny?
I'd
never heard that. I'd never heard. And I've listened to a lot. I listen to a lot of different stuff, but what's funny is it's just, you know, some of the stuff that's really classic and right under your nose out there for so many years. I'd never gotten, you know, hip to it.
Gonna show all them highfalutin' young women just what they don't know how. Yeah, I'm going to Jackson. Honey, turn loose my coat.
I can't.
Well, I'm going to Jackson.
Goodbye is all she wrote.
Live from San Francisco via Skype, it's the Lucky Losers, Phil Berkowitz and Kathy Lemons. Both of you have played with an impressive amount of names over the years. We off the air, we're talking about John Lee Hooker. You've also played with Stevie Ray Vaughan among the two of you. Do you have any great John Lee Hooker stories, short ones that you can share?
My greatest compliment in life came from John. We had taped a concert. I was what was called a send-off singer for his group. So I would get up and sing a couple songs, and then he would come on and do the show. So I only had a few short moments up there, but one night in particular in Canada in a big auditorium, I did a really good job and I was really proud of myself. And we heard it together on tape. And then John Lee Hooker said, that's Big Mama.
Kathy Lemons and Phil Berkowitz, a.k.a. The Lucky Losers, perform at Pop's Place in Decatur this Saturday night. The song you're hearing is I Can't Change Ya. It's from their latest album, In Any Town.
I can call my very own. And I got myself a sweet little angel. Better leave you well enough alone. When I'm hungry, I want the metal. Taste of gold in my teeth.
Thanks for choosing Sound Ideas on GLT and WGLT.org. Our website is where you can find the full Sound Ideas podcast, along with the individual stories and interviews today. Thanks to Ryan Denham, Laura Kennedy, Charlie Schlenker, and John Norton. We want to know what you think of Sound Ideas. Email us at news@WGLT.org, post at facebook.com/WGLTFM, or tweet, use the hashtag Sound Ideas. I'm Mike McCurdy. We're all at WGLT News. Tweet me at Mike McCurdy. This is 89.1 FM, WGLT Normal, Bloomington Normal's public media.